My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
In life and recovery, every day is a little different. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Guest. So ESPN had an article yesterday. I believe Ben Solak was the writer that wrote this piece.
Oh yeah, he went to ESPN. He used to be with The Ringer.
Okay, yeah. So he it is Ben Solak. He wrote this piece, and it's a fun piece to read if you're a Texan fan that enjoys Schadenfreude, as I think this show is a Schadenfreude friendly zone. Schadenfreude being when you take pleasure in the pain of others, especially your arch rivals.
We call it, we have a segment that we're going to make more regular this year called The Petty Cast.
Yes.
So, you get petty a little bit, and it's fun.
It's fun
to be petty as a sports fan.
Yeah, and this one, reading this article, so the premise of the article is here are the 8 second-year quarterbacks that started at least 4 games last year. And they took 5 of them that could be starters this year. There's a few, like Tommy DeVito's not starting with the Giants this year. It's Daniel Jones. There's a couple others. But the 5 guys who are either going to start or competing to start are outlined in this article. And it's Anthony Richardson, it's Bryce Young, it's C.J. Stroud, Will Levis, and then Aiden O'Connell in Las Vegas. And it goes into what we know and what we don't know about each guy and kind of forecasting what it could look like in the upcoming year. I've got some really fun C.J. Stroud stuff here to get to, Seth, that we will get to, but I go back and I look and I thought to myself, okay, there have been other rookies where people thought like, okay, this guy's the best rookie in this class. And they, in the past few years, like the top rookie more often than not has been surpassed by somebody in his own class. And mm-hmm. I'll go back to 2018. The top rookie that year was Baker Mayfield. He was overtaken pretty quickly by Lamar Jackson the next year when Lamar Jackson won the MVP of the league. Lamar didn't start in 2018 till the end of the year.
He got one guy kind of garbage start at the end of the year, right?
I think you're thinking of Mahomes. Lamar started several games and
Lamar
started.
Lamar Jackson started in the playoffs.
He started a playoff game and the Chargers completely flummoxed him. But Baker was all the talk going into 2019. Oh, he's got Freddie Kitchens as his head coach now, and that right? I mean, that was a thing. That was a thing. Like Freddie Kitchens who unlocked Baker Mayfield, the number one overall pick in the draft.
Yeah.
But Baker was the top rookie, quickly overtaken by Lamar. In 2020, that class, Justin Herbert was the offensive rookie of the year. He was quickly overtaken by Joe Burrow. And then eventually, I think even Jalen Hurts is still, even with all the issues the Eagles have, Jalen Hurts, I think, is still viewed by a lot of people as either at worst, even with Justin Herbert, if not above. And then in 2021, this one, Mac Jones was the top rookie in that class, but I don't think people were shocked that he was overtaken by Trevor Lawrence, especially when he was spoon-fed Joe Judge and Matt Patricia as his offensive coordinators.
Right, they went. Josh McDaniels did a great job with Mac Jones.
Yeah.
That was the best example of it, man. I think Josh McDaniels is a really good offensive coordinator, but a horrible head coach.
Right.
He just, because, yeah, and then the next year with a non-offensive coordinator team, he fell back to earth. Yeah.
But point being, there have been rookies before that have been celebrated, like C.J. Stroud is getting celebrated right now, and have turned out to not even be the best guy in their own class of rookies. If you had to pick a fellow draft classmate of C.J. Stroud from Anthony Richardson, from Bryce Young, Will Levis, I'll throw Aiden O'Connell in because this article does, who would you pick?
I would say the best ceiling is still Anthony Richardson.
Yep.
Will Levis, man. I I just don't get it. I just do not get it. There's still smart people out there, you know, so I could very well be wrong on this, that are excited about him, and I just don't get it. So Will Levis, no. Bryce Young, no. Anthony Richardson is a, the athleticism is just glaringly scary. It's just, it's scary because he is a freak of nature. He makes Cam Newton look like a plotter in a lot of ways. That's a bit of an exaggeration, but it's crazy how athletic he is. And then he does, I think with Richardson, he hasn't had a whole lot of instruction and a whole lot of work on his mechanics. So, you know, it drove me crazy last year when he would have a nice throw downfield and somebody would say, oh, I thought he had accuracy issues. Like, no, he's always been capable of making those really good throws. It's a matter of how consistently he does it. So, yes, he does have accuracy issues and consistency issues. If he actually can rein in his mechanics, then it could be really, really scary. So he's still got the highest upside of guys who aren't C.J. Stroud.
Yeah. I'm totally with you on that. That's what I was kind of hoping that's what your answer would be. Because one of the very guys that I just named that surpassed a fellow rookie was Jalen Hurts, who did it with the very head coach that's going to be doing this with Anthony Richardson, Shane Steichen.
I actually get angry about Bryce Young now because, man, he's just got every bit of the signs of a kid who was coddled as a quarterback and always treated as number one. But because he's got this, aw, shucks attitude about it, I don't think he gets skewered for it. And because he's an underdog, because he's small. But for a guy that small to be as sloppy and haphazard with his footwork and frankly lazy about it, despite having all the best instruction, I don't know. I think that's a guy it angers me that people think that somehow he's got that magical it factor that's going to turn him into a good quarterback.
Stat from the article that I'm citing in ESPN about Bryce Young, and then I'm going to give you some stat porn about C.J. Stroud here in just a second, but of the 50 rookie passers to attempt at least 200 passes since 2010, Young's expected points added, which is a big metric nowadays per dropback, is better only than Jared Goff, Josh Rosen, Jimmy Clausen, and Blaine Gabbert. And Jared Goff is kind of he's got a crazy career arc. But the other three guys, Josh Rosen and Jimmy Clausen, were both replaced literally the very next season by their teams. Like Josh Rosen, the Cardinals said, screw it, we're drafting Kyler Murray. The Panthers said, screw it, we're drafting Cam Newton.
And I think where you're going to go with this, based on the article too, is that, you know, Jared Goff happen to be in the right system.
Yes.
And I think it gives an opportunity if you execute that system properly, if you execute a Kubiak, Shanahan, McVay system properly, it gets the absolute most out of a quarterback. And it's taken some guys that were just kind of mediocre quarterbacks and turned them into Pro Bowlers as long as they execute the system.
If you had swapped C.J. Stroud and Bryce Young last year, I know this is purely hypothetical, but in your mind, imagine for a second, you flip-flop those two. CJ goes one to the Panthers with Frank Reich and Josh McCown and that whole merry band of whatever, and Bryce Young comes here with Bobby Slowick and Gerard Johnson, D'Amico as his head coach, different surrounding casts, obviously. What does your brain tell you that looks like?
I think it would have looked better than it did in Carolina, but I don't think there's a chance in hell that we'd be. I don't think Nico Collins gets that new contract.
Yeah.
I think that there would have been some highlights, there would have been some moments, and CJ wouldn't have had the same season either. You know, he doesn't. But it's everything that CJ did from the neck up that was just really rare.
Yeah.
That he was able to. You know, he was put into the exact right system, but he was able to do things that physically I don't know if Bryce Young was able to do either, just as a pure pocket passer.
Yep.
So I don't think Bryce Young wins Rookie of the Year or anything like that.
No, if I were just to quantify it, I'm just telling you like what it feels like to me is like a 3-game swing for both teams. Like I feel like the Texans go from being 10-7 to 7-10, and people are like, okay, this is they're doing some things there, you know, because it doesn't change the other guys that they drafted on the defensive side of the ball and things like that. Like, those things would all be in place. And I feel like the Panthers would not have been the worst team in football. You know, they would have been with CJ a 5-12 or a 6-10 team, maybe something like that.
And I'll be honest with you too. I don't really like crush the draft experts or anything or any of the quarterback analysts about it, like misfiring on quarterbacks, just because it's gotten so hard to figure it out. The college game and the NFL game, they're more similar than they used to be, but there's still just such a huge difference. And because you just have you don't have guys who are 4-year starters anymore in college, so you don't really get to see their flaws and analyze them the same way that you used to. So it's just there's a lot of randomness to it.
Yeah,
and I mean, CJ Stroud did go number 2 overall in the draft.
Sure,
it's not like people were looking at him like he was a bum,
like a project. Right, right. So CJ, this to me, Seth, when people talk about CJ Stroud, and especially when kind of the Ben Solaks of the world that kind of dig more into the film and things like that, the thing that impresses them the most about CJ Stroud is that all these things like passer rating and all these things that are just percentages and rates, he did within, like, and especially the lack of interceptions. That's the biggest one, because you can game plan your quarterback to not throw interceptions just by not having him take any chances. Don't take any risks.
Yeah.
CJ takes a lot of calculated risks. I don't think he's irresponsible.
They were very aggressive downfield.
Yes.
They were very aggressive downfield.
Second in air yards per attempt in the league, third in explosive play rate, third in completion rate on throws of 20 or more yards, fourth in completion rate over expectation on those same throws, zero interceptions on those throws. He didn't throw any interceptions on throws that were more than 20 yards downfield last season.
Well, and I think part of that, too, is that when people point out there's a little bit of luck in that, CJ himself will say, yeah, there's a little bit of luck in some of your every non-interception tells a story.
That's right.
So, but there is also a skill element to it, and when you're throwing deep downfield, I think CJ's very good at erring on the side of caution. That, you know, throwing the ball downfield, if you get a 50% completion rate on deep balls, you're doing astoundingly well. But you also got to be careful that you're not just chucking it up.
Yes.
So that it's a lot of the interceptions on deep balls are very difficult interceptions at times, too, because you got a defensive back that's got to turn and look and all of that and make an athletic play.
Yeah. His completion rate on throws of 20 plus yards down the field, 56.4%.
I'll be honest too. What was it?
56.4%.
You're doing you're doing really, really well if you're getting over 50% on those.
Yeah.
So I think the biggest thing, honestly, I read a lot of these articles from the super stat heads and people that watch a lot of film and everything, and I still think almost to a man, they don't give CJ the credit for doing what he did without a rushing attack. They couldn't run the ball.
Yep.
And he's still doing that. That's the part that Bobby Slowick deserves a lot of credit for, too, for just steadfastly sticking to attempting to run the ball, because that is, even if you're not running the ball well, you're just, as long as you're committed to running the ball, it does set up the play action. But it's just really, it makes it that much harder because you're throwing those deep balls on 3rd and 10 instead of 3rd and 4.
Yep.
Throw a deep ball on 3rd and 4, you got a defense that doesn't know what's coming. 3rd and 10, they know it's passed. So that's the part that gets me really excited, is that if the Texans can get the rushing attack going, it pushes the easy button for CJ Stroud in a lot of regards compared to last year.
Yep, no doubt. You mentioned the system. The article, I think, lays it out perfectly, just to kind of put a bow on this, about the system CJ's playing in. It raises the floor historically of average quarterbacks like Jared Goff, Jimmy Garoppolo, Kirk Cousins. I think you put in here Matt Schaub, another one, right?
Yeah.
It turns high-level guys into MVPs and Super Bowl winners, you know, like Aaron Rodgers and Matthew Stafford.
Well, one of the things that they point out is a negative here, or is an Achilles heel, and this is one that frustrated me towards the end of the year and down into the playoffs. One of the stats that really kept showing up was CJ under pressure, his EPA per drop back and all of this other stuff, was he didn't handle pressure as well. And there's something that's lost in the math there a little bit, where the very reason that he didn't throw interceptions and the very reason that he stopped taking sacks after the second game was that much, much more so than most rookies, he understands the value of quitting on a play.
An incompletion. Yeah.
Throwing the ball away, or we saw this a lot with Robert Woods. throwing that pass that's either going to be a completion or an incompletion, yeah, but definitely not an interception.
Correct.
So it might be harder to catch because there, I would, you know, the casuals would come at me sometimes saying like, well, yeah, but he's not accurate. Look, early in the year, he had like a 58 or 59% completion percentage. And I'm like, you're not watching the games. You're not seeing like just how accurate he is despite the completion percentage.
Yep.
And that's, it's hard for quarterbacks. You know, go back to a young Peyton Manning. He got really good at learning that, like, all right, sometimes less is more. Sometimes you take an L for a bigger W later in the game. And CJ grasped that part. And it, so that under pressure when he's getting rid of the ball or making the safe but, you know, less probable throw when he is under pressure, I think that factors into some of those stats.
I think so too. We're getting a lot of texts from people about what they're excited about seeing in the game tonight. Keep texting in, 713-572-4610. We'll sprinkle them in as we get you ready. 6 o'clock tonight, Texans and Steelers. Texans countdown starts at 3 here on Sports Radio 610. Text message, Seth, I want to keep an eye on the linebacker room. Those guys look slow and out of place in the first game of this preseason.
Yeah. And that's where, and remember, every one of those guys, well, only one of the guys, possibly, that played in the game the other night is going to be a starter for the team.
Yep.
So, depending on what they're going to do with Henry Toa, and as long as Christian Harris actually recovers at some point, I don't know if he's entering Kyle Tucker territory here with whatever the hell's going on with
him. Wild.
But it's, because that was the defense's bugaboo last year was the play action, and those guys look lost versus play action, and they look lost carrying guys in zone coverage over the middle of the field. A lot of those guys were either rookies or guys that you're not expecting to play heavy duty this year, but for depth and for, you know, but some of those guys will play during the regular season.
Sure.
That's definitely something to monitor with the starters.
Yep. Text message, not sure if Tank will be playing any, but just curious to see him back after the injury. I think Tank's going to play. He's been healthy throughout camp. He hasn't missed any practices. And I will tell you, his movement looks fine. He hasn't had a ton of that you and I have been there for, at least. I think he had some good plays up in Ohio, but he hasn't been like the tour de force that he was during training camp last year, which is fine.
Well, it feels like they've been really trying to work the Stephon Diggs connection.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, where Stephon's the number one option on a lot of the stuff they're running and he's getting the ball. I think that the other thing about Tank Dell, remember, is his injuries, like none of them were ones that really should theoretically affect your movement. He had a broken bone, and it wasn't like a complex ankle fracture that can, you know, you always hear about pins having to be replaced and everything. Yeah. It was a pretty simple fracture, and then he got shot on a through and through.
Yeah.
As we know by now, I don't like that we know it, but I know the terminology through and through, and it was a flesh wound. It was a mere flesh wound.
Which he told the Bussin' with the Boys guys that he was jogging like the next day afterwards.
Yeah.
I don't know if that was doctor's orders would allow that kind of thing.
If the bullet comes in and goes out and it's not, I wonder how much of a through and through it was. Maybe he'll go into detail on that. Like, did it? Maybe it just like pierced like the very outside of his leg.
Maybe, yeah. I don't know.
It was pretty. I can't remember what caliber it was, but it was a heavy duty. It was a heavy duty handgun.
Yeah.
So it could have gone. It could have gone into a deeper part of the flesh.
Yeah. Yeah, dude. Thank God that didn't turn out more serious than it did.
He needs to show up with a square bandage, like Trump's ear bandage or something in the first game.
The first game.
On his thigh.
That'd be funny. Yeah, That'd be funny. Speaking of Bussin' with the Boys, that's Taylor Lewan and Will Compton's podcast. I can't decide if I approve of the stipulation that they're proposing between the Titans and the Texans, or if I'm just done with this whole storyline altogether. The players they talk to, Will Anderson, Nico, Tank, all seem to like it. Do you like it? We'll play it for you.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Nerds.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Ready to expand your financial game? NerdWallet can coach you on smart strategies like choosing investments, finding your next credit card, and setting a budget that works for you. Score major points towards your summer vacation by learning expert tips for choosing a high-yield savings account and how to build wealth by investing in index funds. Slide into summer with smarter decisions in 2024. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app. Future you will thank you.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others, like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
For those in recovery, support from friends and family often leads to better outcomes. Here's to those who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. Visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose for information about treatment options and how to support those experiencing addiction.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be.
Coming up next.
Yeah.
All right, Steelers, Texans tonight, 6 o'clock. Pre-game starts at 3. We'll get you more tuned in on the game coming up tonight a little later on in the show. But the Bussin' with the Boys podcast was here at Texans camp, I don't know, a week or two ago, back before they went up to the Hall of Fame game.
It was on one of the rainy practices.
Yeah.
I stood and I talked with Taylor Lewan and Will Compton as their crew tried to unload all of their equipment
in the rain.
In a massive lake that had formed in the parking lot at the bubble. Yeah,
there you go.
And after about 2 minutes of watching them, I said, hey, guys, you know, you could move the van like two spots over to the left.
And you're like, I'm an idea guy. Okay,
I'm standing there with an umbrella.
Yeah.
Not sharing it with either Will Compton or Taylor Lewan.
Or should you? They're Titans.
No.
They're Tennessee Titans. Don't share them.
I gave them no quarter.
Good. Good. So they were here, a couple weeks ago at camp and sat down with a bunch of different Texans, including Will Anderson, solo, and then Nico and Tank both kind of sat down as a duo with them. And one of the topics that came up was the Oiler uniforms. Of course, both these guys, Taylor Lewan and Will Compton, are former Tennessee Titans, so they feel a certain kind of way about the Oiler uniforms. New Texans, I think, you know, young guys that weren't here in Houston, I think probably just look at them and think they're cool, but don't know aren't as attached to the history behind it as maybe some of you listening are. I thought this was really funny. I can't decide if I like this stipulation or not that Taylor Lewan proposed to these guys, Seth. I'll start with Will Anderson and take a listen here. This is Taylor Lewan maybe proposing something that that these two teams could agree to when it comes to the Oiler uniforms.
I don't know if you know anything about us. We both played for the Titans at one point in our lives. But there's always the talk of the Houston Oilers uniforms. I want to talk about your stance on who should be able to wear the Oilers uniforms.
I think we should. I mean, it started here in Houston. We should be wearing them, man. We them.
What do you think about this? Because you guys play twice a year.
Mm-hmm.
Game one,
yeah.
The stakes are whoever wins earns the right to wear the retros in game two.
You like that?
Yeah, I like that.
Let's propose that to the NFL right now.
We should.
Okay, so I mean, obviously the WWE fan inside of me loves any stipulation with a match, right? Dangle it over the field like a money in the bank briefcase, and whoever gets it gets to rip that jersey down.
Honestly, like, you look at the silver boot, like, okay, and that's, you create that, it's kind of manufactured, and it's cool. Over time, it takes on meaning or significance. This is one that has actual meaning, actual significance. As much as I hate to admit it, the Oilers do have, excuse me, the Titans, FKA Oilers, they do have legal claim to the uniform and everything like that. And yet, yeah, there's just something that feels viscerally wrong. A lot of people say, well, hey, look at the Colts or any other team that moves. Right, they kept the same name. Like, they didn't, the Oilers didn't even, they got rid of their name as soon as they got to Tennessee. They spent 1 year as the Memphis Oilers, and then they ejected from it. So by the time they were playing in their permanent home, they had flat out said, no, we don't even want to be called the Oilers anymore.
Yep.
That's where it gets on the emotional side. Like, all right, well, what are you hanging on to then, man?
Yeah. So here were the guys again, Taylor Lewan and Will Compton. They sat down with Nico Collins and Tank Dell and ran the same thing past them.
All right, dude, and obviously the Tennessee Titans have probably the best alternative uniforms in all of the NFL. Who do you think should be able to wear the OG Houston Oiler uniforms?
Come on, man.
I feel like Houston.
Yeah, Houston. You guys know about copyright laws? You guys know about owner Bud Adams?
Nah, I don't know about that.
They got it with that.
My pay grade.
How do you feel about this? So, like, Houston plays Tennessee twice a year.
Yeah. Need that.
Whoever wins the last game gets to wear the Oiler uniforms. And every time y'all play, it's Oilers.
I like that. That's the best decision to have.
The best one, right?
Yeah, that's the best one.
They got to change that rule in the league because that would add so much to the rivalry.
Okay.
Yeah, and it's not even – they don't have to change the rule in the league, but they have to change the whether the Titans are cool with it or not. That's the basic thing.
Yeah, it would definitely add
it doesn't even have anything to do with intellectual property law. It has to do with the fact that the NFL is a partnership amongst 32 teams.
Yeah.
And if the Titans don't want to relinquish it, then they don't have to relinquish it.
So part of me likes it. I like anything that adds some juice to a sporting event, and that would certainly do it. You could hear the – You could hear the uptick in emotion with the guys when those uniforms got brought up. They like those uniforms. They are clean uniforms, man. They look really, really good. There is another part of me, Seth, that when I first saw this, I'm like, yeah, you know what? I'm tired of coveting things that the Tennessee Titans own. You know, like I'm tired of giving Amy Adams the satisfaction of thinking that we must have those Oiler uniforms on our backs. And maybe the introduction of the new Texan uniforms has kind of dialed me back a little bit on wanting the Oilers uniforms to be part of the Texans ensemble there.
Yeah, but so, you know what? You're right then, though. It would have to be I was wrong. They would have to change the league rules. It couldn't be something that if the Texans won 5 years in a row, that all of a sudden Amy Adams Strunk could say, like, oh, I don't want to play anymore.
Right,
I'm turning the video game off.
Yeah.
Yeah, it needs to be an NFL rule that whoever wins that battle gets to wear the Oilers uniform the next time.
But my maybe not wanting to do it, do you agree with that or do you feel like that?
I agree with that unless they change the rule completely to where it just becomes a part of the long-standing rivalry, long after maybe Amy Adams isn't involved Cal McNair is not involved or whatever else. Yeah, yeah.
I just don't like giving her the satisfaction of thinking we want something of hers, even if it is something, the Oiler uniform, that a lot of people actually do want. You know?
Yeah, you're letting your ego get involved.
I know. You just playing hard to get.
Yeah, yeah. If it's something you want, then you want it. You don't have to, you know, you can try to play it close to the vest, but at the end of the day, you want it.
Yeah, probably.
Do you walk into when you're buying a car, you know, before you have your current relationship with your dealership,
right.
Did you walk in and you're like, I'm not going to give this guy the satisfaction every single time. You're never going to end up with a car, Sean. No. You're like,
Now, I wasn't going to just roll over for whatever the deal was, though. You know,
like,
I was going to make him work for it. Seth, this is a text.
I think that's something that would be really good for both teams.
It'd be fun.
It'd be good for the AFC South, frankly.
Yeah. It'd be fun.
Yeah.
It'd be great now, too, because I think the Texans are going to beat up on the Titans for the foreseeable future. It'd be great.
Yeah, the timing is right. Timing's
right, exactly. Text message to you, Seth. Do you like Taylor Lewan as a player or as a person?
Okay, this is a long-standing rule I have. I don't know if this is good for normal everyday life or not, but because I speak into a microphone and I tweet out things and everything, whenever I've been critical of somebody, when I first meet them, I bring it up pretty much right out of the gate because A, they've either heard what I said about them and maybe have an issue with me for it. So, okay, let's clear this up. Or B, maybe they haven't, but then I form a good relationship and then all of a sudden they realize like, oh, wait a second. This guy's a, what's this guy? A two-face? So, with Taylor Lewan, that was the first thing I said. I was like, yeah, you know what, man? I was, really critical of you as a player. And, I got even more in it. It was annoying because you turned into a really good football player.
Yeah.
But I tore into you quite a bit. And Taylor Lewan's response was, oh, you got to.
So you liked him. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. He's, well, like you had pointed out, he's kind of like a wrestler heel.
Yeah.
He likes being the heel.
Yes.
Me telling him that I hated him when he was a player.
Loved it.
Probably to him feels like compliment and praise.
100%. 100%. Yes.
And he did. And that's very open. My saga with Taylor Lewan was that I would, after the first few years, I had to grudgingly admit like, crap, he's actually really good.
Yeah. 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 He was a good player. Retirement yesterday in the NFL. Nick Foles is retiring as an Eagle. Nick Foles has one of the most interesting NFL careers maybe of all time. Because at his worst, he was horrible as a football player. But at his best, he was a Super Bowl MVP. And he's beloved in a town like Philadelphia, which if you just told me Nick Foles, independent of his football career, would be beloved by a town like Philly, I would have said there's no way. There's no way that Philly, whose people care about their sports teams 10 times as much as they care about anything else. They love
it. Like Tim Tebow being like beloved in Staten Island.
Yeah.
Or something. It's just like it's a mismatch.
It's a mismatch. Yeah. Here was Nick Foles. Here was a portion, the very last portion of his retirement. He did about a 3-minute video yesterday thanking people. Here's Nick Foles announcing his retirement.
I've grown so much in my faith in this time. As I step away from this game, I want to cheer on the next generation of NFL players. Go out there each and every day and give it everything you have. As this chapter closes, another one opens. I'm truly grateful for my time in the NFL. I get to be a husband and a father. I have 3 kids at home that I get to be around all the time. I get to coach their sports. I get to be at their sports. And I also get to help them with homework. Get to help them through tantrums. Get to be there each and every day. So I'm truly excited for it. This isn't the end. I know I'll see you soon. Thank y'all.
Ugh. He's excited for the tantrums.
He seems like he's wired to be comfortable in that life.
Yeah, I think so too.
It's one of the hardest things about when you retire from football, or probably any profession, but like especially as a young man, I think sometimes what you envision you're going to be happy doing is it turns out you get a year into it and you're like, oh, it turns out this isn't my gig at all.
Yeah.
And I got to go do something else. So, but he does seem like that guy that could just be full-time dad, stay-at-home dad, and be all about it. Others just need something a little bit different.
Yeah, maybe. My 3 favorite Nick Foles moments from this show that we've talked about, it had nothing to do with the Super Bowl. The time he reminded us that football isn't the most important thing to him. You know, like it's. Remember he kind of backburner after signing a massive contract and having some horrible games in Jacksonville during a press conference. He was like, football, just it's not the most important thing to me. You know, my family.
Yeah, it was almost where he's delivering a sermon.
Yeah,
not just a sermon, but almost like shaming people for caring too much about football.
Yeah. Try pulling that in Philadelphia. He pulled it in Jacksonville. Thank God for him. He pulls that in Philadelphia. He's getting hit with a sock full of pennies on the way out of the building.
He pulled it in the Bible Belt, and it still even wasn't all that well received in the Bible Belt.
Yes.
Yeah, I guess. My favorite story about that, Sean, I think I've told you this before, but I can remember reading it. It was one of my grandparents' Reader's Digests, but it was one of those little blurbs they have. And it was some high school wrestler lost a match, came off, and told the coach, well, I guess God just didn't have it in his plans for me to win today. And the coach said, or maybe God wanted you to win and you let him down.
See, that's what Philly would have done.
That's what
Philly, that coach was an amalgam of every Philadelphian to Nick Foles. Number 2, the Jags bidding against themselves to sign him and overpaying him so that the locker room would respect him, that he was getting paid like a top flight quarterback.
It was weird. It was a weird Tom Coughlin move.
Yeah.
It was one of the stranger things Tom Coughlin did as an executive because it felt so non-old school, didn't
right,
it?
Right.
It just felt like the opposite of you got to earn it, this, that, all the other.
Yeah.
Maybe his agent was agitating for it. Foles is a guy that definitely probably needed his agent to be the hard ass in a lot of things.
Yeah.
So it was just, It was a weird one. It was a weird one. It wasn't like a guy coming. It wasn't trading for Jalen Ramsey, for instance.
Right.
Something else that we're like, all right, this guy's going to want to be the highest paid cornerback in the league after we trade for him.
Yeah, it had nothing to do with him deserving.
He wasn't as good as Jalen Ramsey.
That's right. That's right. Third one, and we can laugh about it now because Nick Foles is clearly doing fine medically, but in his last year in the league with the Colts, Kayvon Thibodeau sacked him, and I mean blistered him. And he was laying on the ground like dead carcass style, and Kayvon Thibodeau was doing snow angels next to him.
A snow angel in September, which was an added insult.
Right next to him, a snow angel. Yeah. Indoors, probably, right?
Right, yeah.
So those are my favorite Nick Foles memories. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. Okay, good news. We're starting to get on that good news part of the curve for the Astros. How big is this bit of news? And they had a great Stropel on the broadcast the other night that I'm curious what Seth's opinion is on this about the title window that the Astros have had here. We'll get to all that coming up next.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Right, well, if you're looking for something to do this weekend, because the Texans play tonight, the Texans are kind enough to play their preseason game here on a Friday, head on out to Sugarland and check out the newest Sugarland Space Cowboy. I hear they're bringing in a youngster by the name of Verlander to pitch tomorrow night, Seth. They've got a new acquisition. I'm anxious to see this this kid Verlander pitch tomorrow night.
See how he does. I hope he's clean shaven. I like it when the rookies are clean shaven.
Yeah.
So you get to, you look back to Jose Altuve in the minors, or Jose Altuve in his first major league appearance, just looks like a kid just off the bus.
Yep.
So this Verlander kid, I hope he's clean shaven.
I hope he's clean shaven. In all seriousness, this is his first rehab start, Verlander. He's going to do a couple of these at least. And he's looking, I guess, to probably eventually 75 to 80 pitches is where he feels he needs to get to get back with the big club again. I think tonight, you know, it's a little like what we were talking about with Damian Pierce earlier. Like, I'm not too worried about the stats tonight. I'm more worried about how it looks.
Yeah.
I think Verlander is similar. Like, I don't care if he pitches three innings and gives up five runs because he's probably working on some things. He's not worried about deception with the hitter. He's worried about how his arm feels. So we'll be looking at things like, the main thing is the velocity. He was back up to 94 miles an hour in his last bullpen. So him continuing to progress to where he looks like Justin Verlander again. Don't care about the numbers, care about the aesthetics.
That might be even with velocity, because Verlander's really good at kind of just, you know, holding things in reserve and dialing it up when he needs to. So, yeah, as long as it's not a concerning velocity or anything,
right,
then I'd feel good. I trust that he'll be able to, you know, he can find the control, he can find all that other stuff. Just make it through. There's almost no start he could give, no matter how many runs he gives up, because that's how these rehab starts go. I more than anything, I'm just concerned that he makes it through the number of pitches that he's slated to pitch.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep. And Verlander, and then like over the next 2 months, does he suck us back into where we're like, they got to bring back Verlander next year? Because the option's out the window now, because he needed to pitch 140 innings with the Astros for that option next year to kick in, and he's got no shot at that now.
Dude, they can't. They've got so much wasted money burning up the luxury tax space right now that you can't roll the dice again on an aging pitcher like that. Not with where the Astros are right now.
I'd need to see what the price is before I close the door on it. Your sentiment is 100% true, because it's not just Abreu money, it's not just Montero money, it's McCullers money. so that's another $17 million right there. I mean, there's, if you count Lance McCullers, who I'm just treating Lance, I hate to do it, I'm just treating Lance as if he's never going to pitch for the Astros ever again. I think that's the healthy way to go about doing it psychologically as an Astro fan. That's $17 million for another couple years. Abreu is, you know, a total check of $30 million, 19 of which is next year, and then Montero's another. That's almost $50 million that for 2025 that you're paying guys to do nothing.
Right. And it's just, hey, look, part of the justification for trading for Kikuchi is that you trust that this pitching, the coaching, and analytics crew still has an edge over other teams. Then all right, then that's got to be with your younger guys, and it's got to be with Spencer Arrighetti and everybody else. Doesn't mean they're going to become the next Justin Verlander, but I think that's just the hard sentimental decision you have to make at that point.
Yeah,
they almost Just because of availability. Availability has been the thing that's crushed the Astros this year with their pitching staff. That you gotta have a heightened sense of, man, we need guys that we can depend on for an entire season.
Yeah. The other weird thing about the Astros this year is just the drastic difference in Yordan on the road and at home. Like, he is especially for him, extremely pedestrian at home. And he goes back out on the road. He goes to Texas, to Arlington to play the Rangers. And now, oh, boom, look who's back. Old Yordan is back.
He found it in Arlington.
Yeah.
Right, whatever it is, whatever he does differently in Arlington, yeah. He needs to add that into his daily routine.
Yeah, yeah, and hopefully there's more of it left for Boston. This is a big series, man. The Astros, they're in first in the division right now, but it's by, you know, it's paper thin. It's you know, literally, it's a tie. It's not literally, it's not a tie. Literally, the Astros are in first by just a few percentage points. But they're even in the standings in terms of games with the Seattle Mariners. And the big thing is, if Seattle turns it up and goes on a tear, and now the Astros find themselves in the wild card race, the team that would be right in front of them right now would be the Boston Red Sox. They'd be 2.5 games back of the Boston Red Sox. So they can at least kind of, as a fallback, in case they don't win the division, chip away at one of the teams they're chasing this weekend, I guess. You know, so it's a big series this weekend.
Yeah, the Astros are 1/1000th ahead of the Mariners when it comes
to... so much better, yeah.
10th if you're saying actual percentage point, but I like to look by decimal point. They're 1/1000th on the actual rate.
Yeah. They had a really good Stroll poll the other night on the broadcast on the Space City Home Network. They do one every night. They post it on the TV broadcast, but they also post it on Twitter. They got about 1,100 votes on this thing. It's almost like a poll of regret. Because it has all the series that the Astros lost, the elimination series that they lost during the golden era of Astros baseball that we're in right now. Today's Chevy Stroh poll: if you had a time machine, which playoff series during the golden era would you go back for an Astros rematch? So it's not guaranteeing you a win, but just which one would you like to go play over again? And the four choices are the 2018 ALCS against the Red Sox, which they lost in five. The 2019 World Series against the Nationals, in which they lost every home game. The 2021 World Series against the Braves, which the Braves won in six. And then last year's ALCS, which, again, the road team won every single game of that series. Did you look at this, Seth? Because I like it when you guess.
I did. Okay. I'm having a hard time with it because it's hard not to... I mean, the World Series... I almost have to take the World Series out of it because obviously... You want to win the World Series. Which playoff series during the golden era would you go back to for an Astros rematch? It's weird that one was that World Series might be the one I was least emotionally engaged in. I don't know why.
The one that won the poll.
There's two World Series. Yeah. The Nationals won for whatever reason. That's the one that looms largest. The Braves one I wasn't as engaged in. The Nationals one because it just came down so much. I would say the Nationals series.
Then that's what the people are saying. 63.5% of the people voting in this, you know, landslide. Almost 2/3 of the people. That would be my vote. I think that to me that's the obvious one. That was painful as hell.
And it was just to not win a home game. And for the Astros to be such a dominant team that year.
Yeah.
That was probably the best overall team of that era, of the entire World Series winning era. And that one stung the most.
Yeah. I if you go back and you power rank all of the playoff Astro teams through the years, and I'm not just talking about this era. I would go back to the early 2000s when they finally broke through and made an LCS and made a World Series. I would certainly go back to the late 90s, those Bagwell and Biggio-led teams.
Yeah.
Probably the two best teams in Astro history are not World Series champions. The one you just talked about, Seth, in 2019 that won 107 games. And then the 1998 team that had Randy Johnson on it. They won 102 games that year. And they were that was a dominant baseball team offensively and pitching.
The whole thing about the 2023 ALCS versus the Rangers, that I know there's the emotional part of it being versus the Rangers, but that also that, I mean, the Astros, that team, there's nothing about them that felt like the other teams in the playoffs.
Yeah.
They got into the playoffs by the skin of their teeth and by the magnanimousness of the Rangers, basically, and didn't play during that series like, oh, yeah, this is a team that just they deserve to win the series.
Yeah, that came in second at 24%. Again, the Nationals 2019 World Series was 63.5%. The Rangers in the ALCS was second at 24%. And then the other two series, ALCS 2018 against the Red Sox, World Series 2021 against the Braves, tied with 6.1%. The only thing that's keeping that Rangers tabulation up there is that it's, like you said, it's the Rangers. If it was any other team in the ALCS, that thing would be down with the other two in like the 6% range, I think.
Yeah, I didn't have that same sense of like, oh man, they missed their golden opportunity
right.
in that one. It just wasn't as emotionally charged.
Yep. That Nationals one is an easy choice to me, man. That was painful. Coming back home up 3-2 with Verlander and Greinke starting game 6 and 7 and Cole available in game 7, and you lose those two games. It's just, I don't say inexcusable. It's the World Series. The Nationals are a good team, you know. But
in a way, yeah. After
it's painful.
It just felt like it was a foregone conclusion that the Astros, once they got it together and they took over, and you could see, oh, this is just a more powerful, better baseball team than the Nationals. That's where it, on the road in Washington. Remember those broadcasters, that radio station from Washington was here, broadcasting from the studio next to ours. And after the series in Washington, they were basically telling us, you know, they came back in, they're like, it's over.
No way. Yeah. Dude, that was painful. They lose game 7 and you got to come in and do a morning radio show in a studio next to the hosts whose team just beat you in game 7 at home.
I threw one of those dudes up against the wall in the bathroom because I thought he looked a little too happy. I was like, not around me, man.
Right,
don't pull this act around me. He's like, I was just trying to wash my hands, sir.
Right.
Yeah.
Seth got right up under his chin, cupped him, and pinned him up against the wall.
And then just in case he was recording it, I took his phone out and smashed it.
And threw it in the toilet and flushed. All right, into the 9 o'clock hour we go. Game tonight, 6 o'clock, Steelers-Texans right here on Sports Radio 610. Let's get into some of the matchups and the players that we're most looking forward to seeing. And I would encourage you to text in 713-572-4610. What are you most looking forward to seeing tonight, Steelers-Texans, a game you can hear right here on Sports Radio 610.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
America's favorite place to watch football is Stadium Swim, located at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Catch all the biggest games at a viewing experience built for sports fans. Chill in one of their 6 pools on 3 different levels for a perfect view of their massive screen. Plenty of seating options from cozy daybeds to private, temperature-controlled cabanas. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com.
Nerds. Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Ready to expand your financial game? NerdWallet can coach you on smart strategies like choosing investments, finding your next credit card, and setting a budget that works for you. Score major points towards your summer vacation by learning expert tips for choosing a high-yield savings account and how to build wealth by investing in index funds. Slide into summer with smarter decisions in 2024. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app. Future you will thank you.
Recovery from addiction can take many forms, and quite often, it's a team effort. For those in recovery, having support often leads to a better outcome. And for those supporting people in recovery, they celebrate every milestone. Here's to family, friends, loved ones, healthcare providers, and community groups who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. If you or someone you know is experiencing addiction, visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose to learn more about the various treatment options available.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be.